All right, so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about bystander intervention, particularly what is so promising about bystander intervention as an approach to sexual violence prevention on campuses. As Deborah mentioned, bystander intervention is now among the recommendations coming from the White House. The Office on Violence Against Women now requires bystander intervention be a component of any prevention strategy on a college campus that is part of their funded college or campus program. There are reasons why more and more campuses are turning toward bystander intervention, often as a primary strategy for preventing sexual violence. So I want to talk about what is so promising about bystander intervention. The first point of which is that with bystander intervention, the numbers are finally on our side. The numbers we are looking at with sexual violence are, according to the CDC's National Intimate and Sexual Violence Survey, 1 in 4 women and 1 in 10 men will experience some form of sexual violence in their lifetime. Those are really high numbers. They are very daunting when you're working on a college campus to try to engage folks around preventing this problem. That's a lot to take on. Like, I have to solve 1 in 4. That feels like too much for most people. When you look at this picture, your sort of isolated potential victim over here on the right, your determined perpetrator of sexual violence on the left, that looks like a pretty hopeless picture. It's difficult to engage a critical mass around that. But this is not the full story, because in fact, any given community you look at, when you're looking at campuses, nonviolent members of that campus community outnumber the violent ones by a lot. Depending on the research you're looking at, our numbers are like 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 40 to 1. So when this is the picture, it doesn't look so hopeless anymore. 20 to 1 odds, I will take those odds. Most people will take those odds. Those numbers are finally on our side. That is an engaging and powerful message for members of a campus community. The second thing that makes bystander intervention really promising is that it allows us to break through some of the historical obstacles to engagement that have gotten in our way to preventing sexual assault on college campuses. And specifically what I mean is the way that we have talked to members of campus communities. We have addressed everyone in one of two ways, as either potential perpetrators of violence or potential victims of violence. I did this most of my career for a good decade. I talked to everyone in my community on my campus in one of those two ways. And those are very clearly defined roles along the lines of gender, right? Men get what role? Perpetrators, right? And women get what role? Victims. As it turns out, that has not been a really great way of engaging folks. There are obstacles to engaging in that way. If you think about talking to men, let's start with men as potential perpetrators of violence, which I did for a long time. I would start very, very young. Like, I would start in middle schools, and I would say to these boys, now that you're first starting to get in your little dating relationships, what I need you to hear is, no means no, and you have to get consent, and you have to respect your dating partner, and it's time you learn the legal definition of sexual assault. And they would say, thanks, nice lady, we appreciate your time. And off they go. And then they go to high school, and a colleague shows up in front of their health class and says, young men, in case you had forgotten, what you need to hear is, no means no, and you have to get consent, and you have to respect your dating partner, and let's review the legal definition of sexual assault. And they would say, actually, we remember your friend from a few years ago. But thanks, lady, we appreciate your time, we're good, we're going to do the right thing. And then they walk onto a college campus and someone just like me stands up in front of the room and says, men, now that you are in college, what you need to hear is, no means no, and you have to get consent, and you have to respect your dating partner, and let's review our legal definition of sexual assault. And like 100 different ways of saying, if we're not being totally clear, you are all out there accidentally or on purpose raping and beating women. Should I be surprised at this point that some of these young men start to feel defensive? That they start to feel like, enough! I get it, I wasn't gonna. Of course they don't want to engage with me. And when I think about the number of men who sat in front of me who themselves had been victims of violence, which is no needle in a haystack. For domestic violence, dating violence, we're talking about 1 in 5 guys with sexual assault, at least 1 in 10 of them. And that I would stand in front of them and talk to them in this way. It's just not okay. It's just not an okay way to talk to people. Of course they did not want to engage in violence prevention. And even if they did, even if at the end of the day, I hadn't completely lost them to the defensiveness, what have I given them to do? The vast majority of the men in front of me who never have, never will perpetrate an assault. All they have to do is check the not a perpetrator box and they're done. They've got no other role to play, no other way to engage in this issue. So we've had this obstacle to engaging men, and I don't think we've done much better by women. Even though most people who get up in front of rooms like this and tend to talk about this topic on college campuses happen to be women, that doesn't mean most women are engaging in sexual violence prevention on campus. Because what does it feel like to be talked to as a potential victim? It's a list of don't do this and don't do this and don't do that, the risk reduction strategies we've been using for so long, which are incredibly condescending and no way empowering. And if that person is assaulted, all anyone has to do is go back to my list and say, well, did she or did she or did she? Well, then of course she was assaulted. And when I think about why these risk reduction strategies have not historically worked for folks, not only is it not effective in engaging people and not an okay way to talk to them, when I think about, in order for those strategies to be effective, what has to be true of the audience in front of me is, one, they have to believe that they are vulnerable to something bad happening to them. They've got to connect with that vulnerability. And two, they have to want to listen to someone in a position of authority tell them what to do about that. And we are primarily delivering these messages to college freshmen, late adolescents. What do we know about this developmental phase? They generally feel invincible. Bad things don't happen to me, they happen to other people. And they don't want to listen to us in authority tell them what to do. They're young adults, they're independent. They don't need to hear this. So it's just a poor developmental match. What if I took all of those same risk factors I've just talked about for perpetration and victimization and put them through the bystander lens? Suddenly, I can be heard in a way that I was not heard before. Now I've got a positive, proactive message. I'm no longer talking to the people in front of me as the problem. I'm not raising the defenses. In fact, now you are my solution. These are the things I need you to look out for. I can assume when I walk into the room that no one in this room wants the next assault to happen any more than I want it to happen. And let's figure out how to solve this problem. The same kinds of messages, when I put them through the bystander lens, don't raise the defenses, and they're a much better match. While a college freshman does not acknowledge their own vulnerability to violence, they've got no problem acknowledging that their friends are idiots, right? Who are going to get themselves in bad situations, right? Like, I can take the same message about risk that I've been giving for so long and put it through a bystander lens and suddenly be heard in a way that I wasn't heard before. It allows me to break through these historical obstacles to engagement. The next thing that makes the bystander approach so promising is that it tells us precisely why people don't intervene and what to do about that. We've got the solution right there in the literature. As it turns out, those of us in the sexual violence prevention field, we're not the first people to try to ever understand or change human social behavior. Lots of people have done this before us. They have been wildly successful. So we've got years and years and stacks of research that tell us precisely why people don't always act and how we can help them get around those obstacles to action. For example, if you're familiar with bystander literature, who's heard of a diffusion of responsibility? That bystander dynamic, lots of folks are familiar. What that says is the fewer people who are around a situation, the more likely they are to intervene. More people around, less likely anyone is to intervene, right? If I was out in the hallway right now and I had a medical episode, there's one or two people out there, one of them's pretty likely to help me. If that happened on a break and the hallway was full of people, I'm way less likely to get help. Not because crowds of people are inherently bad, but because the responsibility for acting will literally diffuse in the crowd. People will tell themselves, surely someone else is going to help, surely someone else has made a call, surely someone else has got this. The same research that tells us that that happens gives us the solution to it. You know who's not subject to diffusion of responsibility? People whose job it is to intervene. So if I had a medical episode in a huge crowd of people and there was an EMT in that crowd, they're actually going to help me. Because they're going to say, oh, I'm a trained EMT, this is my thing. We can do the same thing with bystanders on college campuses, right? If we build that sense of ownership through our programming and through our training, when they see high-risk behavior for sexual violence, we can equip them to say, oh, I'm a trained bystander, this is my thing. And we get around this historical sort of barrier to intervening. Another one of these obstacles that's been identified in the literature is called evaluation apprehension. That's the risk of embarrassment if I see a high-risk situation and I tell myself, oh, I've probably got it wrong, it's probably not a big deal. What if I'm misreading what's going on? And the same research that identified that bystander dynamic tells us exactly what to do about it. You build competence. If I can train you so that you feel competent in recognizing the warning signs of sexual violence, you're way less prone to that evaluation apprehension. So we've got decades of research that tells us exactly how to mobilize bystanders when it's difficult for them to intervene. The final thing I want to talk about in terms of what makes the bystander approach so promising is that it allows us to have realistic discussions about why we haven't historically engaged in prevented violence and what we can do about that. One of the first most important steps to getting people to intervene is acknowledging that it's difficult. That in fact, even really good people don't always intervene every single time they think they should. I, as a bystander, have not intervened in every situation that got me in the gut that I felt like I should do something. And it's not because I'm a bad person, it's because it's difficult. There are obstacles, there are barriers that get in our way. Some of the things I just talked about in terms of social dynamics, also parts of our personality, like I'm shy, I hate conflict, I'm afraid for my personal safety, or our peer relationships, I'm afraid of what my friends are going to think. Those obstacles are real, they get in the way of even the best intentioned of us. When I first started doing bystander intervention approaches with students, I either ignored these obstacles to action, or I said things like, how could a good person just walk by and let that happen? Real members of this community always intervene. And lots of other guilting and shaming kinds of messages with no acknowledgement of the fact that I have been a bystander who did not intervene. As it turns out, guilt and shame are not very motivating factors for most people. What if we could have a realistic discussion about what makes it difficult for us and offer people realistic solutions to that? What if I can walk into a group of college students and staff and faculty members and say, I require zero personal growth from you. If you are shy, you don't have to stop being shy. If you hate conflict, you don't suddenly have to embrace conflict. In fact, there is a solution that you as a bystander can use. Let's own our obstacles. Let's talk about what could a shy person do? What could a conflict avoidant person do? What could you do so you don't get crap from your friends? And we have options. We at Green Dot use the 3 D's, direct, intervene yourself directly, check in, hey, are you okay, call someone on inappropriate behavior, delegate, get someone else to do it, call campus police, get his friends or her friends to pull them out of the situation, get a bartender to call a cab. And then the last is distract. Sometimes that's all a situation requires. A student who had gone through one of our bystander trainings at Green Dot told us the story of a party that he went to where he saw an older fraternity member giving a young woman drink after drink after drink. Over the course of an evening, she became really intoxicated, and he watched this guy pick her up and start to carry her toward a back room. And he did the first thing that came to his mind to do. He ran up to that guy and said, dude, your car's being towed. And that guy ran out of the party. Like, that was enough. That's all that situation required, was a little bit of a distraction to prevent. We can give people realistic solutions that don't have to be a big scene, big deal, busting in to save the day. There's almost always something people can try. The other part of giving people realistic solutions has to do with expanding the notion of who counts as a bystander. When I first started doing bystander intervention, we described bystanders as people who directly witness moments of harm. And what we want to do is really take that a step back and say, actually, bystanders are anyone who is aware of the problem of violence on their campus. Once you hear me say numbers like 1 in 4 and 1 in 10, you cannot unhear those numbers. You are a bystander to that reality, even if you never directly witness a moment of harm. so that every member of a campus community has to make a decision as a bystander to this reality of violence. Will I do something to intervene and make it less likely people get hurt? And that is no less real a choice than the choice a student at a party on Friday night who sees high-risk behavior has to make. They are both the same choice. Will I intervene to make it less likely people get hurt? And the reason I think this allows us to have realistic discussions is it makes intervention much more manageable for people. When I was in college, to do something about sexual assault, those of us on campus who cared about sexual assault, who were advocates against it, it had to become our thing. This had to be your issue. Like, you really kind of had to join the Feminist Alliance and march at the front of the Take Back the Night parade and petition against campus policies that weren't holding perpetrators accountable for assaults. You really had to take it on and make it your thing. And folks who do that, I was a student like that, are really, really, really important members of a campus community, but we are not the critical mass. If we're going to prevent violence, we need a critical mass on our side. In fact, numbers do matter, and most students aren't going to take this on as their issue. If I can put it in the language of bystander intervention, you don't have to, in fact, take this on. It doesn't have to become your thing. It's just, can you do one or two proactive interventions? Could you write a paper on this? Could you write a letter to the student newspaper? Could you have a conversation with a friend about why this matters to you? When I put it in that language of just an intervention, now it's just a couple of moments in time that you have to give. You don't have to take on the whole issue and become the solution to sexual violence on the campus. The last thing I want to just mention in closing is I thought it would be helpful for you all to know what is going on college campuses. I told you lots of campuses are switching toward bystander intervention. These are the primary strategies that campuses are using. So the first, Mentors in Violence Prevention, or MVP, it started as a strategy to engage athletes and has since expanded, really puts a strong role in emphasizing, or strong emphasis on the role men have to play in prevention. The second, Bringing in the Bystander, uses public education and social marketing to address a continuum of sexually assaultive and harassing behaviors. And then Green Dot, that's obviously the one I'm most familiar with. I just realized that does not say 1, 2, 3, because they're all number one. They're really good programs. Green Dot, we use social marketing, public education, and specific skills-based training through a real deliberate distribution strategy to quickly get bystander behaviors to become the norm on a campus. All right, that's all I have to say about bystander intervention. Thank you so much. That's all I'll be.